This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. As unlikely as it sounds, analyzing baseball statistics became Hollywood entertainment in the 2011 film Moneyball.
People are overlooked for a variety of biased reasons and perceived flaws. Age, appearance, personality. Using stats the way we read them, we'll find value in players that nobody else can see. Like an island of misfit toys.
That film, based on the book of the same name, tells the story of the Oakland A's visionary manager, Billy Bean, and his quest to build a winning team on a shoestring budget. Bean enlisted a Yale grad who analyzed stats using a data and evidence-based method called sabermetrics. By looking at undervalued statistics like on-base or slugging percentage rather than more popular stats like batting averages, the team acquired quality overlooked players on the cheap. In that 2002 season, the A's won 20 games in a row, an American League record, and took their division, all on a fraction of the payroll for powerhouse teams like the Yankees or the Red Sox. Billy Bean's success ignited a Moneyball trend among the majors. Teams hired mathematicians and analysts to wade through the numbers and find baseball players who deliver the best bang for the smallest buck. Benjamin Baumer is one of those post-Moneyball hires. He worked for the New York Mets for 8 years and is now visiting assistant professor at Smith College. He's also co-author of the book, The Sabermetric Revolution. And Benjamin, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much.
Where did this term sabermetrics come from?
So this comes from, it's an acronym for the Society for American Baseball Research, so that's S-A-B-R, and I believe Bill James coined the term. A lot of people call him the godfather of sabermetrics, and I think it's appropriate. He was writing about this with a volume and intensity and insightfulness that exceeded pretty much everything that we had seen prior to that. So in the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, Bill James was a huge motivator of the ideas behind sabermetrics and the popularization of it.
Oh, so gone are the images of the saber-toothed tiger somehow digging
That's
into...
Right. Yeah, completely unrelated, yep.
Why does baseball lend itself so easily to in-depth statistical analysis? For example, why didn't sabermetrics start in basketball?
Well, it's a good question, and I think the simplest way to think about that is just the fact that the action in baseball is very discrete. So everything seems to take place for the most part in these very easy to categorize chunks. So, you know exactly who the batter is, you know exactly who the pitcher is, you know exactly who all the nine fielders on the field are. And in general, most of the time, you know exactly what happened. You know if it was a single, you know if it was a ground out, you know if it was a fly out. And, in sports like basketball or soccer, the action is just so much more complicated and intertwined. And so when you have this action that's very easy to categorize, people record statistics. And then once you have those statistics, you start analyzing them. And it's easy to think about the contributions that the batter is making in relation to like what the pitcher is doing much more easily than it is in some of these other sports.
Mm-hmm. It was Michael Lewis's book, Moneyball, that made many of us aware of sabermetrics and how it was used by the 2002 Oakland Athletics. Were the Oakland A's really the first team to use these kind of undervalued stats?
Probably not. It's hard to say because teams, except for the A's in the case of Moneyball, are generally not so forthcoming about what it is that they're actually doing as far as sabermetrics goes. But we know that, there was a guy named Craig Wright who worked for the Texas Rangers before that, and we know that Sandy Alderson, who was Billy Bean's predecessor who hired him, was actively engaged with sabermetrics before the Billy Bean era. So, yeah. So other teams were certainly doing this before the A's.
All right. This brings us, however, to the accuracy of Moneyball. Your book attempts to set the record straight on what really happened. What were some of Moneyball's fabrications as far as you're concerned?
Well, there's a number of, facts that they get incorrect. But I think the big picture is just that Moneyball told the story this David and Goliath story where David is able to slay Goliath because he's smarter, essentially. And, when you actually go back and do the accounting for that season, for the 2002 A's, the contributions that were made by the players who were acquired for their sabermetric virtue were relatively small in relation to the contribution of the players made who were already there and who were acquired by virtue of their traditional scouting acumen. So Eric Chavez, Miguel Tejada, Barry Zito, Mark Mulder, Tim Hudson, these are bit players in Moneyball, the book and the movie, and you know they probably contributed something like two-thirds of the wins that the A's had that year.
I guess it makes for a better story, however, when you have Davey and Goliath.
Certainly it does. And it was a great story, there's no question.
In the book, in your book, you write about how teams hired more statisticians after Moneyball, not necessarily because they were positive that it worked, but they didn't want to be left behind. So was sabermetrics overhyped?
Well, I think Moneyball was overhyped. And I think that the notion that there are easy answers to difficult questions just by looking at statistics is a little bit overhyped. You know, so if you saw Moneyball and you got the impression that, you know, oh, there's like a couple of smart guys and they do these calculations and all of a sudden like we understand how baseball works, you know, it's really not the case. Statistics is difficult, and a lot of what comes out of it are very subtle, kind of nuanced interpretations. And sometimes I think that gets lost a little bit.
There are many ways to scout a baseball player, and I'm guessing the extremes might be on the one end purely statistical. You know, you pour over the numbers, you use logic to choose the player with the best stats. The other end of the spectrum is that gut instinct, you know, just sensing something in a player that cannot be described. Are there things that statistics cannot measure, Benjamin?
I think there's definitely things that statistics don't measure. You know, can they measure it? I don't know. Maybe that's a question for a psychologist. But I think the, you know, it's certainly easy to see things that we currently do not capture, right? Like if you think about scouting a high school baseball player, they're probably facing pitchers who throw 80 to 85 miles an hour. And, you know, let's say you find a player who's just crushing that type of pitching. Does that mean that that player is going to be able to hit a 95 mile an hour fastball? You know, that question is hard to answer, and it has to do with his strength and coordination and reflexes and, you know, determination and how his body is going to change in the future. So there's all these questions that go into it, and certainly statistics is not capturing any of that.
We're speaking with Benjamin Balmer about sabermetrics, the Moneyball model, for lack of a better word. He's written a new book about sabermetrics, and he also served as a statistical analyst in the world of Major League Baseball. Benjamin, you worked for the New York Mets for 8 years as a statistical analyst and started in 2004. Now, this was just a year after the book Moneyball was published. Do you think that your hiring had anything to do with release of the book?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been told that it has. Jim Duquette, who was the GM of the Mets at the time, the person that hired me, you know, he'd been reading Bill James for years, you know, long before Moneyball. And I think what Moneyball provided was the impetus for a lot of people to really get in the game here. And I think the Mets, like a lot of other teams in the years after that, you know, really found that they wanted someone to do this kind of job. And I was lucky enough to be that person for the Mets.
And wonder what a typical day consisted of for you, you know, going out watching the guys in the field or just sitting there crunching numbers?
Mostly the latter. You know, a typical day was in the office. For me, it meant, you know, database programming and web programming and, yeah, crunching numbers, having meetings, you know, talking to other people in the front office, talking to the coaches occasionally. And then if we were home, you'd stay for the game and watch the game. And, you know, that was certainly the more fun part.
Well, in Moneyball, it was Jonah Hill playing a Yale grad. What kind of education would one need to be hired as a sabermetrician?
Well, it's another good question. And, you know, that has changed a lot in the last 10 to 15 years. I had a master's in applied math at the time. And, you know, now you're seeing people coming out of schools with PhDs getting hired by clubs. So it is much more difficult and much more competitive, certainly, than it used to be.
Well, we are in Red Sox country right here, and the Moneyball story does briefly involve the Red Sox and Theo Epstein, former general manager's embrace of the Moneyball method. Can you explain, tell us a little bit about how that worked for the Red Sox?
Well, so the Red Sox were, you know, one of the early adopters, and I think what separated the Red Sox in some ways from teams like the A's is that they actually had money. So not only did they have the intellectual advantage, if you will, but they also had the financial advantage. And, you know, very clearly that has paid dividends for them.
And I think the Red Sox, at least in the movie, if I'm remembering things correctly, wanted to hire Billy Beane, but he didn't take the offer.
That's correct, yeah. He apparently they had a deal, and Billy Beane backed out at the last minute. You know, the important thing for the Red Sox was that they found someone who, you know, just as Billy Beane was completely on board with the sabermetrics. And, you know, that really matters. Having someone at the top who is behind that kind of thinking really makes a huge difference in getting everyone else involved. And the Red Sox have certainly been successful doing that.
Benjamin Balmer, he's assistant professor of mathematics and statistics at Smith College. He and co-author Andrew Zimbalist Jr., professor of economics at Smith, wrote the book The Sabermetric Revolution. For more information on the book, you can go to wordofmathradio.org. Well, stick around for more Word of Mouth. Producer Zach Nugent has been scouring record stores for the best new music offerings. When we continue, a little sample of his essential playlist. But first, the news.